Hello, I'm Steve Davis. Welcome to this podcast for the National Centre for Vocational Education Research. In June 2010, the Standing Council on Tertiary Education, Skills and Employment adopted a new set of national research priorities on tertiary education and training, and one pointed to the need to better understand structures in the system by examining the impact of policy, funding and market frameworks on the provision of education and training. Since very few researchers have investigated these issues, NCVER decided to directly commission essays on various aspects of the topic, resulting in the publication Structures in Tertiary Education and Training, a Kaleidoscope or Just Fragments, Research Readings. Given the complexity of these issues, it's quite difficult to distill the discussions into a few simple messages, but nevertheless, one of the editors, Francesca Betti, is here with me to try. Francesca, let us begin by perhaps defining what you mean by structures in tertiary education.
To try to elaborate on that word, the architecture of the system. So institutional structures, regulatory structures, politics indeed as a force which guides the way in which tertiary education is delivered in Australia. Also, of course, the structures of the market.
Would it be fair to say also that even the definition of tertiary education is not a closed question?
Certainly isn't. And I would say one of the things that for me is most prominent in this exercise that we've undertaken is a recalibration of this notion that came out of the Bradley Review of an integrated tertiary education sector. I think, having just reread the whole set of essays, there's a growing consensus that we're not talking about one sector. One of the discussants in this book actually says, no, I think we should be talking about two distinctive sectors, higher education and vocational education and training. But there is no doubt that there are blurrings of the two. And as another essayist points out, particularly I would add in Australia, the notion of higher education being anything but vocational is really a limited one.
So how do we get the metaphor of kaleidoscope from these essays and the field that you've been looking into?
One of the authors, Michelle Simons, called her essay a kaleidoscope. She was talking about the kaleidoscope of the workforces in the tertiary education and training sector, that is both from universities and from vet providers. And she was arguing that what has been different conditions for workers in both those areas needs a unified workforce development plan in order to take it forward to provide a workforce that can deliver education in the 21st century. We, as editors, thought that that metaphor applied more broadly. And indeed, a lot of the essays do talk about the differences in higher in universities and in vet providers, but the need in some way to not have uniformity, but some kind of links. And it seemed to me that this notion of light linking fragments was one way of trying to encompass or to encapsulate what this book is talking about.
And of course, back to looking at structures in general here, one of the areas was the federal structure of Australian government on vocational education. There's the regulatory settings, etc. A lot of this comes down to the question of who pays for what. How did this set of essays illuminate some of that question?
Well, I don't know if it illuminated it or it continued to put the various points of view. This is a fundamental issue, particularly for those trying to run the system, politicians and others, and of course for those paying for it. One of the debates that comes through many of the essays is the question of whether or not education is a service, a commodity, or whether it is a public good, and therefore whether the person getting the education should be buying a service or making a contribution to the public funding of education.
And some of this, perhaps it was, relates to the fact that there's been a lot of talk of market. It's market language that is often brought up in these sorts of conversations. That's part of this as well, isn't it?
It is, and that goes back to my point about structures perhaps being the wrong term. Yes, there is increasingly the set of terminology around about markets being applied to education, and that causes some hackles to rise, I'd have to say. There are people who think of education as something rather different and don't like these terms of competition, contestability, the market, because they're educationalists, perhaps. I think also because perhaps those terms are not well understood. But also, as one writer says, the managerialist sort of approach has taken over in a lot of administration of education. The thing that is quite clear again in this book of readings is that if we want to apply these terms, we have to understand them well and understand that even for those who think of education in market terms, this is not a market like, to quote Tom Carmel in an earlier book, selling bananas.
I do come back to your mention of the Bradley Review of Higher Education and the move to try and see if we can achieve an integrated tertiary sector. Your writers seem to be of the opinion that this is not something that's achievable. Is perhaps one of the messages to government, to industry sectors, institutions, to actually be prepared to live and sit with complexity in this field?
I think they probably are willing to live with complexity. What happens, though, is that when you try to regulate things, you tend to move towards uniformity. And I think that's the point the people are making. Yes, we want much greater, a more seamless transfer of students from one part of this post-compulsory area to another. But not all students are the same, and not all teaching approaches are the same. So we have to find mechanisms by which to ensure the diversity to meet demand, either from individual students or from industry or whatever.
And talking of diversity, how did this group of writers get chosen for this particular group of readings?
Well, you can blame that on me. We wanted to bring some new people's ideas to these topics because, as I've mentioned, if you think about it as architecture, as politics, there are other disciplines in which these questions are explored, and we thought perhaps different people could illuminate things for us. I also was very keen to ensure that we brought voices from outside the university sector, as we were talking also about the vet sector, so that you'll see there are practitioners in there, there are officials, and there is the voice of a journalist.
Is the diversity of voices one of the reasons why perhaps we didn't reach a point of having a strong argument for an integrated sector, the range of voices?
No, I think it's more the actuality of this type of education. It's much easier, I suppose, to conceive of schools. We're talking at the time, of course, of great debate about the school system, but most people have a sense of what it is to have a school education. Once you start talking about vocational education and training or university education, the clientele is much broader and the purposes for which people are being educated is different. But I'd like to make a point I've been ruminating on here, and that is whether we also have to... This wasn't raised in the book, but reading it, do we have to start thinking about tertiary education in a different way, not as post-compulsory education? That for a lot of people, having a tertiary qualification of some kind is going to be a necessity. Now, if that is for young people, we're talking really about rather different educational conditions. And some of the people in this book do think about universities as places where young people go after school. But we're actually talking about a much broader canvas than that. And increasingly, the requirement for a lot of people to do professional qualifications much later in life.
And one thing that struck me looking back on the history of these podcasts for NCVER, in which we've often been grappling with tertiary education, understanding universities and vet institutions, etc., is maybe it's not always just structures, but there's an element of culture involved here. Can you talk to what has been raised by some of your writers on the cultural aspects of this topic?
Well, they have raised it. And interestingly, I think, and some of the discussants have picked up on this, Kwong Li Dao particularly, that, you know, they bring their own cultural baggage to this. So someone looking at these issues from a university has a different conception of what vocational education and training can offer. And so similarly does an industry bureaucrat as opposed to a trade union official, although maybe he's also an industry bureaucrat. So there's that cultural impetus, but you're quite right also that some of the barriers to, if not integration, but certainly better collaboration between vet and universities is very much coloured by culture, as is the whole question of quality.
Now, Francesca, if my reading's correct, there's been little consensus within the writers and discussants on achieving a single integrated tertiary education sector, that there's variety in it, and that in fact's a good thing. But aside from that, if we look at the pillars of this system, what sort of actions are available to strengthen those within the system we have? Is there anything that you can draw to our attention from these readings?
Well, I mentioned before there's a journalist amongst the writers. That's John Ross from the Higher Education Supplement. And he was asked to talk about federalism. And his essay comes down firmly, I would say, on the side of having vocational education training run by the Commonwealth. So there's one of the pillars, if you like, because governments are so involved in education. And others see, not everyone would agree with that, but there is this continuing problem, going back to culture as well, about what's sometimes called parity of esteem between vocational education and tertiary and higher education. And the argument is that apart from perhaps removing some of that complexity you mentioned, and also having a more even playing field, a word Jonathan Pincus in the book doesn't like, but having one level of government regulating and funding and so on might help to streamline things. Another pillar, I suppose, is this whole question we've still to sort out, and that is the one you asked me before about who pays. And I think, again, we have then still to have more of a debate about what the purpose of education is and how vocational vet is, something else you NCVR talks a lot about, because that would help to, I think, clarify the way in which institutions operate and interact with their clients, to use the language of the market.
And still with the language of the market, I am sure the Standing Council, like most aspects of society, are always looking to achieve reform, improvements, efficiencies, etc. In looking back through this body of work, are there any aspects that you might identify as the low-hanging fruit, where there are obvious things that could be done in the here and now?
I think the answer is no. But what I think has come through in this is that while diversity is really greatly valued, there could perhaps be greater uniformity in the overarching structures of the system. Only, though, if these were established with an explicit goal of encouraging diversity. And so that diversity would be in educational approaches, therefore in creating different workforces. Now, we haven't mentioned, actually, the question of different awards and different qualifications for teachers, which is a big debate at the moment. But if you thought about diversity within the structure is important, that might help take that debate forward. And also, if I were a public servant, I'd want to try to narrow the debate by becoming more articulate about the vocational outcomes.
Thanks for listening to this podcast produced by the National Centre for Vocational Education Research. If you'd like to download Structures in Tertiary Education and Training, a Kaleidoscope or Just Fragments, visit our website www.ncver.edu.au.